Hey, everybody, this is Diane. This is another episode of This Conversation Rocks. It is 2016-06, and my co-host is...
Todd in Los Angeles.
And we're here with another election edition.
Go figure.
I'm kind of missing death. We're going to have to get back to Teleute at some point.
We're going to have to do something other than this. All right, so hopefully this is a special episode of This Conversation Rocks because it is Friday night, and it is the night before the Democratic caucus in Nevada and the Republican primary in South Carolina. Our goal is to have this up tomorrow before the polls close, or the caucus, depending on which state you're in. Following that up immediately with a wrap-up episode on Sunday to be published quickly. That will also be looking forward to the February 23rd Nevada Republican caucus.
The Washington State primary, right?
Yeah, Washington State's in there somewhere.
We'll talk a little bit about that.
They've got a beauty contest thing more than anything, so
yeah.
We'll discuss that on Sunday. And on February 27th is the South Carolina Democratic primary, which then leads into the Super Tuesday on March 1st. Yay.
It should be very, very interesting. All right, so tonight we are talking a little bit about New Hampshire and whether New Hampshire is important or not. We're going to talk about the caucus and the primary that's coming up tomorrow. And then we're going to finish things out by talking a little bit about superdelegates, right?
Right.
Okay, very good.
So, coming out of New Hampshire, obviously for the Democrats, interesting, but no surprise, Bernie wins, although it's a good margin, 20 points or so.
It was a huge, huge margin, 22.4%.
So the question, of course, is, does it matter? And the answer is, well, it depends.
I was going to say, just like last time, the answer is yes and no. So here's the thing that's really, really big about New Hampshire for the Democrats, at least in my opinion. Sanders won all of the demographics except people making over $250,000 a year and people who were older than 65.
Excellent.
And this was on the heels of Gloria Steinem and Madeleine Albright shaming women for not voting for Hillary Clinton, and I think their strategy backfired.
I don't think it worked.
I don't think it did either.
I'm not sure it backfired as much as I don't think anybody gave a fuck.
Well, let me tell you, as a vagina haver, I'm telling you it backfired.
You were going to vote for Bernie anyway, so.
I was going to vote for Bernie anyway, but I'll tell you what, it really pissed me off to have two women shaming countless women over their decision to vote really pissed me off.
Yep.
And I'm seeing it a lot, and maybe I'm just seeing it because that's what's in my feed and that's what I'm interested in looking at, but I'm seeing a lot of women who are really frustrated by that.
Yeah, look, it was stupid. But it all goes back again to the concept of the establishment and Gloria Steinem and Madeleine Albright in particular. You know, are part of the establishment.
Isn't that funny? I never thought 20 years ago, 30 years ago, that we'd be talking about Gloria Steinem as part of the establishment, but you're right.
She's mainstream, right? She's, you know, she's not controversial anymore unless she goes out and does something stupid like this. But, you know. Anyway, Bernie's victory, of course, no surprise, big margin. The margin helps. It has started to move some of the polling. In Nevada and South Carolina, you know, but it still remains to be seen. My biggest problem is that I want him to win, and that's not the same as the polls showing that he's going to win.
Right. So. You and I were talking about that before we started recording, and you warned me to be careful about letting what I wanted overcome reality. And I said, hey, now be careful. You're starting to sound like Neil Gaiman.
But I do want to bring everybody... Oh, I guess we should talk about the Republicans.
We probably should. So,
all right.
The xenophobic, tyrannical, misogynistic, racist, multi-billionaire Donald Trump won.
But again, this is no surprise. It was as expected.
And you know, the truth is, I'm really just stealing that from Huffington Post, because they introduce him that or add a little subtext to their articles every time they publish. So thank you, Huffington Post.
But no, I mean, probably the surprise of the night was Kasich.
Right.
Got a resounding second place. However, not to take all of it away from him, it is apparently the only state in which he invested any of his money. So it is unclear to anybody how he's going to follow that up in South Carolina tomorrow.
Well, and so here's the thing. His resounding second place was still 20 points below Trump. I know, which is so frightening.
And Cruz, of course, got a really distant third. And Marco Rubio, who was pumped after coming in third in Iowa, dropped to fifth.
That's right, behind Bush.
Which is amazing, right?
Right.
Because how the fuck do you actually place lower than Bush?
I don't know. I really don't.
I mean, you're an actual honest to God senator, and you're not some guy going around trying to stab his friend with in the belt buckle. So
now wait a minute, don't get everybody confused, because that was Carson.
So, that's what I'm saying.
Just so
that's
we're clear.
I'm just what I'm saying though, right?
Right.
Is that, you know, Rubio's got qualls. All right, speaking of the Republicans though, I found this great article on Wikipedia, yay Wikipedia, that lists everybody who's been in the race, when they got out. And I'm going to go ahead and put a link to it. I keep forgetting I was wrong. Scott Walker is not the first one to have gotten out of it. That actually went to Rick Perry.
Oh, okay.
Who dropped out back in September 11th, 10 days before Scott Walker. And then we had some other guys drop out by the end of the year. And then Mike Huckabee on February 1st, Rand Paul on February 3rd, Rick Santorum on February 3rd, Carly on February 10th, Chris Christie on February 10th, and Jim Gilmore, who nobody knew who was fucking running.
Right, except Rachel Maddow. She has an ongoing joke with him.
Dropped out on February 12th. So, and that leaves Donald Trump, Marco Rubio, John Kasich, Ted Cruz, Ben Carson, and Jeb Bush.
So when, Lord, when will it be Ben Carlson's turn? When is he going to give it up?
I don't know, because that man is crazy.
I was listening to the Young Turks yesterday, and they were talking about the town halls. Maybe it was the day before. And they were saying, well, you know, you can sleep through the third of the one that Ben Carlson is participating in, because, you know, he's really going to sleep through a third of it, so. So I found a really good article about New Hampshire that I want to share just before we dig deep into the upcoming races, and it was NPR's top takeaways about New Hampshire. And okay. So number one goes back to what I was saying. Hillary Clinton has a woman problem. And they were talking specifically about the fact that she lost women by 11 points to Bernie Sanders.
I'm sorry. The way you said that, you could have inserted a whole lot of bad jokes.
I'm sure there will be plenty of people who do.
You know.
So, number two, Hillary Clinton still has a trust problem. She still has high negatives. 30% of the people who voted in New Hampshire said honesty and trustworthiness mattered, and 98% of those people broke for Sanders. I'm sorry, 91% of those people broke for Sanders.
The other 9% being confused as to what they actually believe in.
Yeah, really. number three, the voters are angry. Well, we kind of knew this, right? But what it means is that the people who are perceived as outsiders, i.e. Trump and Sanders, are the people who benefit from that.
Right.
Number four, NPR says there's a big education gap in the GOP. So this was a little bit confusing the way it was worded, but the breakdown is most of Trump's support comes from people who only have a high school education 46% as compared to Cruz having 13% of people who only have a high school education.
Yeah, that doesn't actually surprise me, right?
But this is kind of interesting, too, and this is the wording that they did that confused it a little bit. He's also got a lead in people with college educations, but he's only leading Cruz by 14% in that category. So he actually has both college-educated and high-school-educated voters, but there's a broader split right. when you look at the high-school-educated voters. And then number five, Republicans decided late and debates matter. 42% of Republicans said in New Hampshire that they had decided just in the few days before the primary, and half of them said that the debates were important, which points to why Rubio did so poorly.
So it's interesting because I've been listening to a bunch of stuff about the brain and how the brain works.
Oh, tell. Do tell.
And on the left hemisphere, we've got this chunk that they call the interpreter. Or, as some of the neurology guys call it, the baloney factory. And that is where we make up reasons to justify what we've already done.
Oh, that's interesting.
Right? And so it sounds perfect. And I'm not saying that anybody's not representing themselves correctly. I'm saying that because of the baloney factory, you don't even know if you're representing yourself correctly.
Right, because the baloney factory makes it up in such a way that we think it's true, that it is. We think it's a true representation of our behavior.
So why everybody says that the debates were important, maybe they're not.
Is it because mainstream media told us that the debates were important and that Rubio blew it?
Right, and therefore that sounds like a reasonable answer that a reasonable person would have, and therefore your baloney factory went with it.
That's very interesting. And that kind of brings up the next question that I had, which is, okay, if debates were that important, how do you factor in that Trump skipped a debate?
Exactly, right? And the whole thing is, people are saying, oh, they're undecided. You're not undecided. You already know who you're going to vote for.
Right.
If you don't know who you're going to vote for, you're an idiot.
Well, and apparently the baloney factory forgot to take into account that Donald Trump skipped that debate, or forgot altogether that Donald Trump skipped the debate.
Right, because... So... Right, no, this is exactly it, right? It's kind of interesting when you stop and think about it. Because the problem is that we all think that we are rational, logical things, and we're not. We're completely not that. But we can pretend to be that, especially when there's a camera in front of our face and our opinion is important. We don't want to sound like a fucking idiot.
So you just completely undermined everything we've done with this podcast for the last year.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what do you say, right? Because it's like, well... Fuck.
Well, so it'd be really interesting to know how long that part of your brain hangs on to information. I mean, does it only hang on to the information from the most recent debate to justify your behavior? Because really, I mean, if people
I think it only hangs on to stuff long enough to justify your behavior.
Right. That's what I was wondering. So it'd be super interesting to know what the research says about that.
And by the way, I don't think this in any way negates these general consensus ideas or anything. I'm just saying that it's possible that they're all wrong.
Well, and again, it doesn't negate it because we say it and we do think it's true. It just says where the ideas come from.
Right. Absolutely.
It's just interesting.
Yep.
So, was New Hampshire representative?
No.
Here's what I read, okay? So I was really, really struggling to decide, and of course we said yes and no, right? And this is essentially what this says, but it is representative in that there was a very, very large voter turnout. It's not representative in that it's not ethnically diverse. Voters can meet and vet candidates in ways that they can't in other states because it's so small. They have a lot of opportunity to have contact with the candidates in settings where the candidates aren't controlled by their handlers.
Hey, and after some fucked up technical problems, we are back the next day trying to still pretend that it is Friday night while we record this.
Right.
It's really Saturday morning, and now we're scrambling to get this damn thing done before the primary in South Carolina, and the caucus in Nevada are actually done for the day. Okay, so when we left, you had just finished your 5 takeaways from New Hampshire.
And I think I was talking about, you know, is New Hampshire representative? And I think I got most of it out.
And the answer, oh yeah, so the answer to all of that is, of course, New Hampshire is in no way representative. And one of the biggest reasons is, you know, you were saying that there's this opportunity to meet the candidates that
Right. We were there.
And it was the senator from Wisconsin who used to be on Saturday Night Live.
Franken. Al Franken. Franken. Yeah.
I remember years ago, Franken wrote a book, right, where, you know, he was, you know, like a candidate for president. And he was talking about this thing that they all do, which is, you know, promise to visit everybody. But the way he said it in the book, his character said it, he was going to walk to every door in New Hampshire. Because it's such a small state. You know, which, of course, didn't quite work out. But that's the thing, is that I will never get a chance to see Bernie up close and personal. Right? I mean, I will never, you know, in California, it's just not going to happen.
But people truly did have the chance to have beyond a simple meet and greet. In New Hampshire. So that is something that sort of makes it significant, but it's not representative of what the rest of us are going to have as an experience.
Right. The rest of us are judging it by, you know, debate performances, political ads, and
if you dig a little deeper, like what their platforms actually are.
What their website says, you know.
So I did want to say one more thing, and then we can leave New Hampshire unless you have something else you want to add. But I did not know that the Republican primary there was an open primary. And I was reading, I can't remember the source, but I was reading a somewhat conservative source, and they were talking about how with an open Republican primary, you get rhinos, Republicans in name only. And the person who was writing the article actually called Romney and McCain rhinos, so you can see how conservative the author was. But the point that that author made was that Sanders got votes in the Republican primary as well.
Okay, so here's the thing about that, because, and you always hear the Republicans in particular talk about it because they're so paranoid about voter fraud and everything. It always cracks me up. So Sanders and Clinton are in a hell of a tight race.
Yes.
So I'm going to waste my time going and voting in the Republican primary instead of casting my vote in this really tight Democratic primary? I don't think so.
I think that's good logic. I mean, I think the phenomenon that we're actually seeing is what you've mentioned all along, which is that there are some Sanders Republicans. There are people who were intending on voting in the Republican primary anyway, and they cast their vote for Sanders.
Sure, but the thing is that would actually skew, given that, right? And this is where the logic of this guy's argument is just completely bullshit. If the Sanders guys are ending up voting for the Democrats, then the whole thing should have tilted far more conservative and Cruz should have won.
That's a good point. That's a very good point because you're taking the somewhat moderate element out of the Republican primary if you're losing people to Sanders.
Right. You know. But, you know, and the same logic applies for what I was saying about the Democratic side. Like, nobody's going to go cross. And the same thing is true, right? The Republicans are not going to go throw a whole lot. Most Republicans are not going to waste their vote in a primary for Sanders.
Good point.
They're going to be in there trying to get their candidate in what is a tight race, and every vote counts, especially if you want somebody a lot more moderate than Trump or Cruz, right?
Like, right. Kasich. And it may have just been...
Everybody think Kasich's votes came from? You know, like, out of the blue? You know, that was the moderate... That was the moderate wing of the New Hampshire Republicans, right?
What's left of it.
What's left of it, right? So, I really feel bad for mainstream moderate Republicans, even slightly right Republicans, because you have to deal with guys saying, oh, you're a Republican in name only.
Right.
And what you people should be telling these guys is go get fucking bent.
Right. What you should be saying is, no, I'm a true representative of the Republican Party the way it used to be.
The way it should be, which is slightly right of center, pro-business, a little bit more hawkish. You know, these are the things, you know, no problem. Because what we need in this system is balance, and what we have is partisan bickering from the extreme edges.
Absolutely.
So to all the Republican listeners out there, all zero of you.
Yeah.
All right, to everybody who knows a Republican, who's good friends with a Republican, point out to them that they shouldn't be taking this rhino shit, right? That their party needs to get kicked in the balls. Because you guys are Republicans. You have a legitimate point of view and everything. And all I can really tell you is if your party's not representing you, come vote for ours and let's start over.
Come on, you Sanders Republicans.
Exactly, right? You know, in California, the Republican Party is basically gone, right? This is not long term. This is not a good thing. The Democrats will skew too far down their own agenda without anything really checking them here in California. It will happen. And it's the whole thing. The whole system is predicated, and this is what everybody seems to forget, the whole system is predicated on actually being able to do nothing. And so then you compromise so that you can do something.
It's that whole compromise thing that people have forgotten about.
Right, because, yeah, again, as we've said many times, when it's all said and done, nobody should be happy.
Or everybody should be happy with a little bit, but not everything.
Right. You know, it's truly the best deal we could get was, well, we raised taxes by 3% and we cut social spending by 2%.
Right. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. And on that note, we might as well head into South Carolina and Nevada.
Yes. And a special shout out to Washington State, which is having something today.
So they're having a closed Republican caucus.
Right. But the presidential primary delegates are awarded on the basis of the result of the Washington State primaries on May 24th.
So the thing that I read is that they actually split. And again, this is just the Republican caucus. I don't know if the Democratic caucus or primary works the same way, but I read that they split delegate allocation between the caucus and the primary. So some of the delegates will get allocated today in the Republican caucus in Washington State, and then the rest of them get allocated based on the outcome of the primary on May 24th.
So,
which just is bizarre to me.
Yeah, we don't know what that means.
So you go, Washington, you go.
Now, the Democrats, it's a little clearer what the Democrats are doing, although it makes no more sense. The Democrats in Washington will have a primary on May 24th, but it doesn't matter because the Democratic caucus is on March 26th and all delegates are assigned to the caucus.
Okay, so that doesn't make a lot of sense to me either.
Right. I lived there for 12 years.
I know.
I never understood. All I knew is that it was no point in voting in the primaries on the Democratic side, so I used to switch over and vote on the Republican. I used to be that guy that you were worried about crossing into your open primary.
So, you know, I'm jumping off the starting block a little fast here, and we don't have to get into superdelegates yet, but I'm wondering if maybe the separate caucus and primary system is to somehow get public opinion so that the superdelegates can talk about that or base their vote a little bit on that.
Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. It's weird. Washington, you're weird. We don't know what to do with you.
Yeah, keep Washington weird. All right, so yeah, right now the Democratic caucus in Nevada, where 43 delegates are at stake, and the South Carolina Republican primary, where there's 50 delegates. By the way, the delegate counts for each of the parties are completely different.
Yes, you know, they are.
So they mean nothing if you try to look at them side by side. You know, going into today, of course, Trump is most likely going to win in South Carolina.
Still favored, but the gap has been closed a little bit.
Right. Although, again, when I'm looking at 538, what I'm looking at is not what the results are going to be, but what the most likely outcome is, right? Which is just, you know, who's going to win, who's not going to win.
So, and I'm assuming, I don't have it up, but I'm assuming that Nate Silver is still calling it for Trump.
Yeah, absolutely.
So who does he predict is most likely to be second? Because I think that's going to be significant.
Again, they're just predicting who's going to win, right?
Right.
And, you know, basically what they're doing in their model is they run their model a billion times or whatever, right? And they take the outcome of their model, you know, and in that billion runs, Trump wins 80%, 82% of the time.
Wow.
And that's why they're calling it for Trump. The percentage has nothing to do with the margin of victory or anything like that, which I think is one of the things people don't understand when they look at 538.
And how 538 gets misread.
Right.
Yeah.
Because South Carolina, Democratic side, right now they have Clinton winning it 100% of the time. But that, of course, can change based on Nevada and everything else.
I think, and that answers a question that we always ask, is it important? Well, I think that, like any of these races, there's potential for importance.
Right, because, you know, the fact that Clinton's going to win the Democratic South Carolina primary, which is not this week, but next week, and I don't know why we're talking about it, but just using it as an example, the fact that she's going to win it doesn't tell you the whole story.
Right.
Because all Bernie's got to do is get close again, right? You know, all he's got to do is stay close for a little while, and that potentially shifts the momentum, right?
Right. I'm sorry, you know, going back to New Hampshire, I think that did shift the momentum. I think that we're going to see, and it's wishful thinking. Some of it is wishful thinking, but I think we are seeing a momentum shift. We are seeing that these states that have been looked at as Hillary Clinton's firewall, not necessarily the case. I think people are starting to get pissed off about being looked at as a sure thing, as the firewall, as the demographic that's going to help Clinton win.
Yeah. Here's an interesting article I'm looking at right now on 538 talking about Nevada, Democratic primaries in Nevada. And the fact is that there has been almost no polling done.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that was one of the things that I had read too, is that it's hard to predict because there's not a lot of great polling. There's been polling over the last couple of days, but, you know, the data points are fewer and farther between than they are for the Republicans in South Carolina.
Right. And again, I think we've talked about it a little bit, but, you know, 538, the way they work is that they're taking every poll that they can get their hands on and running it through their grinder. And so with a lack of polls, they don't have a really good opportunity to come up with a really good prediction.
So another thing that I read about the closed caucus in Nevada is Nevada. Sorry, I'm going to switch back and forth. I apologize to anybody who lives in that state. There is same-day registration for the Democratic caucus. So that also makes it challenging to predict, because we don't really know how many people are going to participate in the caucus process. There may be a ton of people who flood and same-day register, or it may have a poor attendance. We don't really know. Right. If New Hampshire is any guide, the attendance was big, but we don't really know.
Big turnout favors Bernie having a good
coach. Absolutely.
So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what we record tomorrow when we're wrapping this up.
Right.
Okay, so that's basically it, right? We're calling it. I mean, I am going to call just to see if I have any ability to predict the future, which is my own bullshit. But I am going to say that Clinton wins in Nevada and that Trump wins in South Carolina.
Ah, see, I'm going to call it for Trump and I'm going to call it for Sanders. It may be wishful thinking, but I'm going with it.
Hey, you know what? It's not that it's wishful thinking on my part that Clinton's going to win.
Oh, I know. Believe me, I know.
But you know, going back to the way our brain comes up with it, justifies and everything, you know, I could be completely full of shit here. I think I have some strong evidence for my prediction, but I'm really starting to think that that doesn't matter.
So I just want to go back to the Republicans really fast, and then we can leave South Carolina and Nevada. Who do you think is going to come in second? Because I do think that's significant.
South Carolina?
Yeah.
Yeah, Cruz.
You think so? Because of the evangelical vote?
Yeah.
I did hear on NPR yesterday that 65% of the people who they polled in South Carolina identify as evangelicals. So I do think that there is a chance that they could sway for Cruz.
We are surrounded.
So I, you know, this is probably kind of off the map too, but do you think that the evangelicals might be rallied to support Trump because of the statements made by the Pope?
No, what's interesting is that I heard this great article on why Trump does have evangelicals, right? And it's really weird because in my opinion, it takes some convoluted work out of your baloney factory to get you here. But
yeah, to be an evangelical Christian and support Donald Trump, absolutely.
Because on what they consider the tier one things, right, abortion and stuff, they don't believe him. They don't believe what he says. But what they do believe him on is like tier two stuff, which is like fuck Muslims, right? You know, and it's just like, but why wouldn't you vote for Cruz? Because you probably believe Cruz on. I imagine that Cruz's problem is that he has a trustworthy problem.
Well, right? And a likability problem, because like it or not, that is a factor in the race as well, on both sides.
Hard to say that there's anything in Ted Cruz to like.
Yeah.
As a human being. You know, and the Pope's comments, well, you know, I think the best response to the Pope's comments came from Jeb Bush, who just a month ago said that, you know, we would know if you're a Christian to... His response to the Pope is, well, you don't have the right to judge anybody's Christianity. If they say they're a Christian, they're a Christian.
Oh, now that's funny because I I'm not a Christian, but you know probably by looking at my Facebook feed that I really like a lot of the stuff that Francis has to say. I mean, I like his social awareness. I like that he's really dedicated a lot of his papacy to reaching out to the poor and supporting the poor. So I really felt like his comments about Trump were spot on.
Of course they were. Because this goes out to everything we've said, right? Trump is a xenophobic, bully, misogynistic...
Racist.
Racist. But the problem is so is a majority of the people voting for him, apparently. Mm-hmm.
Oh, which is heartbreaking.
Yeah. And this is where, you know, it puts lie to the claim that, you know, the civil rights movement changed everything.
And puts lie to the claim that we are in a post-racial society, we don't need affirmative action, we don't need voting rights. We could go on and on and on.
Because the truth of the matter is, these people are as bad as they ever were, but, you know, now they just have to tolerate people.
And now they have a voice. They have a really loud voice. So, yep. Before we dive into superdelegates, this seems like as good a place as any, because we're talking about affirmative action and voting rights, to bring up a little correction in our Antonin Scalia episode. So I mistakenly said that Anthony Kennedy was nominated at the end of Bush's term in office, George Herbert Walker Bush's term. He was actually nominated at the end of Reagan's second term. And he was confirmed at the end of Reagan's second term. So a little correction there.
Oh, shame on you.
I know. I had my timing off. They all kind of blur into each other. Reagan, the first Bush, they all kind of blur into each other.
Of all the things we've said on that, that's on this podcast, that's the only fact we've gotten wrong? Wow.
Oh, I suspect we've gotten more wrong, but I just wanted to acknowledge that, yeah, I did that.
Okay.
Okay, so on to the superdelegates. So one of the things about New Hampshire that freaked people out is that essentially when you divided the superdelegate votes, Bernie and Hillary walked away with the same number of delegates, even though he crushed her in the primary in New Hampshire. So people are really freaking out about the superdelegate votes.
Right. And of course, you can find all kinds of explanations as to what superdelegates are, but first of all, let's acknowledge what their purpose is.
Yeah, I'm interested in this because...
Their purpose, it's just like the way the Republicans do their thing. The purpose of the superdelegates is to try to influence the outcome so that the establishment gets the candidate they want.
Right. So I did some reading because I didn't know a lot about them. They were first created for the Democratic Party in 1982... And, quote, they were supposed to improve the party's mainstream appeal by giving party insiders more influence in picking the candidate and kind of distancing themselves from activist voters. So basically, it's rigging the system.
Right. It's supposed to prevent the Democratic Party from nominating...
Bernie Sanders.
Yes, but...
Someone who the establishment feels is not electable.
Right. Or maybe is electable, but not somebody the establishment wants.
Right.
You know, the Democrats have been doing this for a while. The Republicans do it themselves. One of the biggest challenges is that the superdelegates, I mean, they are unelected delegates who are free to support any candidate for the presidential nomination at the convention. But the people who are superdelegates are, in fact, all Democratic insiders.
Exactly. So
They're party bosses and stuff like that. You get to be a superdelegate by being loyal to the party. And exactly. So here's the biggest reason the superdelegates play against Bernie is that Bernie's not a Democrat.
Right. And, I mean, when you look at it, Bill Clinton is a superdelegate. I mean, that right. kind of tells you everything you need to know.
Well, but if you think about it, it makes total sense, right? You know, I'm sure Jimmy Carter is too.
Except the superdelegates don't make any sense to me at all as part of the activist voters that the Democratic Party is trying to distance themselves from.
Well, again, the whole the whole purpose is to try to make sure that they can sway the convention to an establishment candidate.
So I just want to hit people with a few numbers. So 30% of the 2,382 Democratic delegates that are out there, 30% of them are superdelegates. So there are 712 total superdelegates. Right now, and this is based on an AP survey of superdelegates that was done on the 18th, so just a couple of days ago, 449, which is 63%, have committed to Hillary Clinton. 19 have committed to Sanders. They were not able to reach 62 of them to participate in the poll, and 182 cited themselves as uncommitted.
Right, and let's be clear, because these guys are party people, they're going to have a hard time supporting Sanders, because Sanders is not of the party. And the thing is if you support Sanders, you are likely to be losing your influence inside the Democratic Party itself.
Unless there is a big sweep of progressives who ride in on Bernie's coattails, and I don't know that that's going to happen.
But the progressives would have to be into the Democratic Party apparatus
right.
itself.
Right.
Which is not going to happen.
And you know what? Honestly, this is the first election where I can say truthfully that I am angry with and disillusioned with the Democratic Party. This is really the first election, in all honesty, where I would not call myself a Democrat, even though that's how I'm registered right now.
Yeah, well, this goes back to something we've been talking about for a while, which is the Democratic Party has been relying on our votes for quite a while, and the problem is they don't earn them.
Right.
We end up voting for these idiots because they are the lesser of two evils oftentimes. So, I mean, the case between Obama and Romney was pretty stark.
Right. And really the case between, let's say, Trump and Hillary is pretty stark, at least for me.
Right. And see, the Republicans bring this on themselves, right? As long as they continue to nominate people like that, the Dems are going to continue to win the presidency. But yes, when you start looking at the Democratic Party and the operations of the Democratic Party, you realize
they're just as corrupt.
Of course they are, right?
Yeah.
Because the whole point of the party is to maintain the party.
Yeah.
Had Bernie been a registered Democrat all these years, it would be a different thing, because at this point, when it was Clinton versus Obama, the number of superdelegates that were committed was much, much smaller.
Well, and I think you are exactly right. I've been thinking about that as this conversation develops, and you are exactly right. I mean, I think a lot of us are kind of thinking, okay, well, you know, at this point, Clinton had a big superdelegate lead, but she still ended up losing to Barack Obama, so there's hope. But I think you are exactly right. Bernie Sanders is not going to support the party apparatus. Apparatchik.
Or more importantly, the apparatus is not going to support him.
Right. So I think that absolutely makes this scenario very different from what we saw develop in 2008.
Right.
So Move On has gotten involved. You've probably heard about this. MoveOn.org has a petition that is directed at the superdelegates that basically says, let the people decide, go with the will of the people. And right now, let's see, as of last night, they had 350,000 signatures. And the next step is a petition drive in all 50 states to target the individual state-level superdelegates. So I will do a write-up and give you a link for the Move On petition.
Right, because we need to really start trying to do anything we can to help this out. But
yeah.
Again, it's the same thing as the Supreme Court justice situation, right?
Exactly.
it all depends on where you're standing as to what should happen next.
Right? Yeah, absolutely.
If you're a Clinton supporter, the system makes total sense. And by the way, more to the point, right? If you're part of the establishment, the Democratic Party establishment, what they're doing makes total sense. Why they would want to support Bernie over somebody who is a Democratic Party insider, Clinton, that just doesn't make any sense for them.
I will say something. So John Kerry, who is also a superdelegate, said in 2008 that he was concerned about the repercussions of voting against the will of the voters. You know, many of the superdelegates face re-election at some point, so we need to make it clear to them that if they support the party and not the people, that they lose our votes.
Right.
I want to talk a little bit about the Republicans, because you're right, they do have superdelegates, but their superdelegates work really differently, and I didn't know this either. I had to do some educating myself for this episode. So they allow 3 additional people to be appointed to each state delegation, and those are their quote-unquote superdelegates. So basically, their number of superdelegates is slightly under 200, and they are obligated to vote for the person who is the nominee. They really don't have the power that the Democratic superdelegates do.
Again, trying to force the outcome, right, so that there can't be a challenge at the convention.
Right, so you're not looking at potentially a brokered convention like they've been talking about.
Right, because, and the thing with the Republican primaries and stuff is that they're way more complicated in the way that the delegates are allocated. Because I'm looking at 538 just as an example of how bizarre it is, right? The way that the allocations work, for example, if Cruz wins the primary in his home state of Texas by 1 vote, he'll probably win a handful more delegates than his nearest competitor. By contrast, if Rubio or Trump win Florida by 1 vote, either would win a whopping 99 more delegates than his nearest competitor. It has to do with some of the states are winner-take-all and just the stuff's weighted and how many delegates you get. So, like, the Republican thing is just a real mathematical nightmare to figure out. The Democrats are a little more straightforward, but at the end of the day, the superdelegates on both sides are designed to force an outcome that does not require a fight at the convention behind a candidate that the party wants.
Well, and I thought this was really interesting, and I believe the source is NPR, but the quote was, superdelegates in the Democratic primary support unity between the party and elected officials. So this goes back to what you were saying. I mean, it's unity between the Democratic apparatus and the people who are elected Democrats.
Right, and has nothing to do with the will of the people.
Absolutely. So
Because you know what? If you really wanted a system that was about the will of the people, there would be no primary system.
Right. We'd have a general election that was a direct election.
Right. Everybody register and run. Good luck. Have a nice day.
Yeah.
And it would be a whole lot more interesting if that was the way the system worked. The primaries are very undemocratic. When you talk about, a democracy, the primary system is very undemocratic because the parties are the ones putting forth people you can vote for and limiting your choices.
That's very true.
If you want to run and I want to vote for you, that's democracy, right?
And, the problem is, and it's funny that we were talking about compromise as a positive thing, because now I'm going to talk about compromise as a not-so-positive thing. The problem is that if you do get, for example, a third-party candidate, you end up splitting the vote. And I'm not going to cite Nader, because Nader's role has been, I think, disproved. I mean, I don't think that he split the vote enough that was the problem with the 2000 election. But if you get a really good third-party candidate that's getting a lot of support on either side, you're losing votes for whoever is the party candidate.
Right.
I don't know. I get more and more disillusioned the more that I learn.
Hey, anybody who likes sausage or the law should never
So, oh, go ahead.
But the way to look at it is then to really start to understand that this is the way the system works. We are all children when we talk about change and everything, right?
Right.
Because we don't know how the system works. So now we're adults and we know how the system works. So if we want change, we have things that we need to do here.
Right. You have to understand, before you can change something, you have to understand how it works.
Exactly.
And this is not stuff that you learn in civics. This is not stuff that they teach you.
No, well, because, you know, unfortunately, K-12 education in the United States, despite all of its advantages and disadvantages, almost all that's immaterial. The one thing that is true about it, though, is that it's always optimistic. Good overcomes evil. The right thing always trumps the wrong thing. You know, that's the American education
system. I was going to say, and that does go with the overall American narrative, regardless of what side of the political divide you're on.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's this belief that good always overcomes evil and blah, blah, blah. And the truth of the matter is, there is no good, there is no evil. You know, there's just us, human beings, trying to get by the best we can on this planet.
Exactly.
And we do what everybody does, right? We try to game the system to our advantage. You know, and so if the system is gamed against us, we need to figure out how to game it for us.
So
I don't have the answer to that question yet.
So I kind of want to wrap up our discussion of superdelegates with a portion of an article that's in this great little electronic news magazine that I get delivered to my Kindle every week. It's called The Week. Have you heard of it?
Oh.
It's pretty cool. So basically what they do is they take articles from tons of different sources, put them into their little news magazine, and just put it out there. So it's a variety of different perspectives. It's kind of cherry-picking some of the better articles on both sides of the aisle and putting them into this format. So it's a nice summary of what's happened over the last week and what the big issues are. And it's just been a really great...
What's this called?
It's called The Week. And, you know, not to put a plug, but I'm going to put a plug. You can get it delivered to your Kindle and I'm assuming any other device for $4.99 a month. So it's kind of like having a magazine subscription, but they put together things from a variety of different sources and deliver it as one magazine.
Okay.
So anyway, this is an article called The Superdelegates, The Democrats' Stacked Deck. And this is the very end of it. Is there anything less democratic than the Democratic Party? Asked Investors Business Daily in an editorial. Liberals love to spout off about voter rights and participatory democracy. But who wants to take part in elections when your vote can be negated by an elite, privileged club? In New Hampshire, the votes of six Democratic superdelegates equaled 60,631 popular votes for Sanders, said Russ Belville in the Huffington Post. If millennials see their choice negated by baby boomer superdelegates, they will rightly conclude that the system is rigged and may decide to stay home in November. And I think that's the risk that we run.
There's some real validity there in the argument, but the one thing I'll hit on is that while we love to bash the Republicans for repressing the vote, the Democratic Party wants to repress the left-wing vote.
Yeah, they're just a little more sneaky about it, or at least I thought they were more sneaky about it. They're not because so sneaky now.
There's a big difference between trying to exclude the left, right? And trying to exclude black people.
Right.
There's a huge difference in that. One is, you know, okay, you disagree with our point of view or whatever, you know, so you don't really want us involved. Okay. It's not great, but that is what it is. The other one is fucking straight out racist.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
All right. So, yeah, the superdelegate count remains a problem for Bernie. Not over. It's not something that can't be overcome, but it is a problem. But,
so we'll give you a link to the Move On petition.
Excellent.
And we're back on tomorrow morning to talk about the outcome of today.
Yay!
And at some point, I know I said this early on, but it would be nice to do a non-election related episode. So
it'd be tough. This
maybe we can look at that. Or maybe if there's a lull between primaries and caucuses, we can look at that.
Or when we just all throw up our hands and go, fuck it. What I was going to say was that you had some things that you wanted to say about a friend of yours.
Yeah. So I'm going to wax a little maudlin here. I found out 2 nights ago that a friend of mine who is quite a bit younger than I am, she was 36, died very suddenly. She was an ER nurse that I worked with for a long time. She was a volunteer firefighter in a small community that depends on its volunteer EMS and firefighter service. She comes from a family of volunteer firefighters. Her mother, her dad, her brother continue to volunteer in the community in which she lived. And it's just, it's a huge loss. I can't even begin to fathom how huge the loss is at this point because it's so raw. So Katie was a good Irish girl. Katie, you've been on my mind a lot lately. And I wanted to read this Irish blessing that I thought was really cool. A friend of mine posted this to Facebook today about another relative, and it just was perfect for Katie. So may you see God's light on the path ahead when the road you walk is dark. May you always hear, even in your hour of sorrow, the gentle singing of the lark. When times are hard, may hardness never turn your heart to stone. May you always remember when the shadows fall that you are not alone. So I would like to raise a glass to a good Irish lass, Miss Katie Corrigan. You are going to be missed so much by so many. And you had a very brief time to touch people on this planet, but you sure did make a difference.
I kind of think we just ended there.
Well, you know, I do have a Neil Gaiman quote. I don't know if you want to save it. I was thinking about Donald Trump when I pulled up this quote. Maybe it's just better to end with death, with her quote, which is, you get what anybody gets. You get a lifetime.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Take care of each other, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Good night and joy.